London's police department reopened its investigation into the unsolved murder of the Palestinian political cartoonist.
Nigel Ali ha rappresentato lo specchio del
Najee al-Ali's work was for a long time reflective of the Palestinian cause. His cartoons were very critical of everybody involved in the Palestinian plight. Andala means bitter in Arabic and well represents the struggle of the Palestinians. The fact that the boy was drawn from behind meant that everybody, including the Arabic world, had turned their back to Palestine. Al-Ali's assassination was plotted by dark powers, certainly close to the Mossad.
Najee al-Ali's book was recently launched in Naples. It will also be presented in several other Italian cities, including Rome, Genoa, and Bologna. Max Civili, Rome.
On the banks of Kashmir's famous Dal Lake, surrounded by the majestic Zabarwan mountain range, Asia's largest tulip garden opens for visitors. 1.5 million flowers of 68 varieties have vibrantly colored the earth.
This is heaven and this place is beyond imagination. After facing lockdown for 2 years, this place is a treat.
Whatever is said in the media and shown is not the truth. The truth is, it is the most secure place to visit.
Kashmir is witnessing bumper tourist season this spring after COVID-19 pandemic lockdown. Administration as well as people expect a bumper tourist season.
We are trying our best, and this year we are lucky in terms of early spring, so that people of Kashmir will have an economic boost.
Following the coronavirus pandemic, the tourists stopped visiting Kashmir, and last 2 years, Kashmir's economy faced a major setback.
Tourism is our backbone of our economy. The money they pump in our economy is manifold for our economy. So that's why our tourist, this tulip garden, it gives impetus to our tourist season. It prepones our tourist season. We have seen the initial response from tourists, particularly from outside UT. We are hoping that this season will be a great season for our tourism sector.
To reclaim the fractured economy, Kashmir's administration has organized a tulip festival to attract more tourists and locals so that the lockdown impact vanishes slowly to conflict-wrecked Kashmir.
After 2.5 years of continued closure due to COVID-19 pandemic, the opening of this garden has brought delight to the people of Kashmir, who for decades have suffered political instability and turmoil. Opening of such spaces help boost morale and is a good start to a fresh year. Shahana Bhatt, Indian Administered Kashmir.
In the limelight.
The hawks in Washington want to jack up the military budget and use Ukraine as an excuse, warned one analyst. Stay with us for an article in this regard, written by Jake Johnson, journalist. This article is published under the heading, Biden asks Congress to approve record $813 billion in military spending. Here's the story. Rebuffing progressive lawmakers' calls for Pentagon spending cuts, President Joe Biden is set to unveil a budget blueprint for the next fiscal year that includes a record $813.3 billion in funds for the U.S. military apparatus, a $31 billion increase from the current level. The president's fiscal year 2023 budget request, which must be approved by Congress, is expected to contain $773 billion for the Pentagon alone, as well as billions in funding for the Energy Department's maintenance of the country's nuclear arsenal. The New York Times reported recently that Biden's funding request for the Pentagon, the only federal agency that has not passed an independent audit, will include include $4.1 billion to conduct research and develop defense capabilities, nearly $5 billion for a space-based missile warning system to detect global threats, and nearly $2 billion for a missile defense interceptor. According to Bloomberg, the White House is urging Congress to approve $145.9 billion for procurement funding that will allow the military to purchase 61 F-35 jet fighters from Lockheed Martin Corps, fewer than previously planned, as well as the B-21 bomber from Northrop Grumman Corp. and two Virginia-class submarines from General Dynamics Corp. and Huntington Ingalls Industries Corp. The president's latest budget proposal will land on Capitol Hill amid the operation in Ukraine, which has thus far proven to be a major boon for the U.S. weapons industry as the Biden administration pours arms into the country. The hawks in Washington want to jack up the military budget and use Ukraine as an excuse. William Harting, a senior research fellow at the Quincy Institute for Responsible Statecraft, argued in a recent interview on Democracy Now, noting that Biden's new military budget request amounts to $100 billion more than was spent at the height of the Cold War, adjusted for inflation. Such a massive military budget increase, Harting warned, is only going to benefit weapons contractors and members of Congress who receive campaign contributions from them. In a statement recently, Harting said that his spending to address the crisis can be more than readily accommodated under current Pentagon spending levels. The Pentagon budget is replete with examples of waste and dysfunction that must be addressed before going on a new spending spree, he added. This includes dangerous or unworkable systems like F-35 combat aircraft and the new intercontinental ballistic missile ICBM. At this, the routine contractor practice of grossly overcharging of the Pentagon for spare parts and the steep cost overruns on major systems, and there is room to cut tens of billions of dollars from the Pentagon budget without diminishing the security. In his budget request for the current fiscal year, Biden asked for $753 billion in military spending, and Congress ultimately approved $782 billion, an indication that lawmakers could add to the president's new $813 billion proposal. Last week, Representatives Barbara Lee and Mark Pocan, the co-chairs and founders of the Defense Spending Reduction Caucus, warned Biden that dumping more money into the Pentagon's overflowing coffers will continue to starve our domestic priorities of needed funding. In recent days, the Biden administration has had to begin shutting down key coronavirus pandemic response programs due to GOP obstruction of new funds. Meanwhile, Republican lawmakers and some hawkish Democrats have clamored for more Pentagon funding. Some of our colleagues will continue to seek virtually unlimited amounts of funding for the Department of Defense, no matter the department's own assessments of its needs for the coming fiscal year. This mission creep is dangerous to peacekeeping efforts, Lee and Pocan wrote in a letter to Biden, adding, diplomacy and international aid will suffer, as will our response to the larger threats currently facing the nation, the ongoing global pandemic and climate change. Yifat Saskind, Executive Director of the Global Women's Rights Organization, MADRE, argued recently that endless military spending isn't giving us security. It's robbing our communities of the resources they need to be secure, like healthcare and green energy, adding, "We are being robbed of resources to feed the endless hunger of the military-industrial complex."
Ask the followers of the remembrance if ye know not.
You're listening to the program The Key on RIB English Radio with Shiraz Hossein Agha, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom and a PhD in philosophy.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to our program, The Key, here at IRIB English Radio. Today on The Key, we're going to be examining a very important and at the same time interesting question, and that question is regarding whether or not it is permissible for a Muslim to pray for a non-Muslim, right? This question is asked a lot by Muslims living in non-Muslim countries, right? Obviously, Muslims living in non-Muslim countries, living in the West, or living in, you know, non-Muslim countries, like, for example, Muslims living in India, where, the religion of the, you know, the majority of the population is Hinduism or Buddhism, or, you know, like Muslims living in China, where the majority of the population is Buddhist, right? So these people, you know, they're surrounded by these non-Muslims, they have friends, co-workers who are non-Muslims, you know, and, you know, they love them, they're friends with them, and in their prayers, they like to pray for them. You know, or people who are Muslims, but they have non-Muslim relatives. These people ask, can we pray for our non-Muslim dad? Can we pray for our non-Muslim mother or sister or whatever? You know, this is a question that gets, you know, asked a lot. According to some of the verses of the Quran, when we look at the verse in a very superficial way, it seems that God is trying to say that, you know, we can't do this. We're not allowed to pray for them. For example, in one verse of the Quran, we read that it is not permissible for the Prophet or those who believe to ask forgiveness for the polytheists, even if they are their close relatives. Right? So the apparent meaning of this verse, when we look at it at face value in a very superficial manner, it seems as if that, God is saying that, hey, you can't pray for non-Muslims, don't do it. But if in continuation, if we look at this verse, we see that, no, God, he mentions a condition and a clause for this. God says that, مِن بَعْدِ مَا تَبَيَّنَ لَهُمْ أَنَّهُمْ أَصْحَابُ الْجَهِيمِ, after it becomes clear for them that they are the inhabitants of hell. Right? So this clause, it conveys the idea that this impermissibility, this prohibition is conditioned with the fact that the person that we're praying for, the non-Muslim we're praying for, we should be sure that this person is going to go to hell. Let me ask you a question. Can anybody be really sure that somebody's going to go to hell, a polytheist or a non-Muslim? Obviously not. Until the person actually dies in a state of, you know, disbelief, right? So before that, how are we supposed to be sure if this person is going to go to hell or not? We're not sure about it, so we can pray for them. And, you know, the gate of repentance is still opened for them. So here we like to add another clause, and that is that this verse only is talking about asking forgiveness for these non-Muslims. With respect to other, you know, types of prayer, you know, asking for their well-being, after asking for their safety, asking for their, you know, long life, these are things we can ask God for. And this is reinforced by a prayer that we read in Sahif al-Sajjadiyyah. Imam Sajjad alayhi salam, in this book of prayers, a very famous book of prayers, we read the following prayer. He says, Allahumma adkhil ala ahlil qubur as-surur, Allahumma agni kulla faqir. O God, feed and make self-sufficient every poor person. He doesn't say, make every poor Muslim self-sufficient. O God, feed every hungry person. O God,
clothe every naked person. The Imam doesn't restrict himself to Muslims. His prayer is general, right? It includes non-Muslims as well. It's possible for somebody to say that, well, it's true that the Imam is stating something general here, but this could be conditioned. It could be restricted to by means of other clues that we have in other places, such as the verse we were talking about. We can say that this prayer, even though apparently it's general, but it's restricted to Muslims. But however, based on what we talked about earlier, it seems that these other supposed clues, do not have the strength to condition the generality of what the Imam is talking about here. Thank you for joining us here on The Key. We were looking at the possibility of praying for non-Muslims in the light of the Quran and traditions. Thank you for joining us. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Shiraz Hussein Agha, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom and a PhD in philosophy, on the program The Key on IRIB English Radio.
You can also send your questions to englishradio@irib.ir.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/ParsTodayEN. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/ParsTodayEnglish.
A senior Iranian lawmaker has said,
contrary to Washington's claims, America's
President Raisi has emphasized that
U.S. sanctions have failed to extract concessions from Tehran.
Iran Today.
Iran was as if in a golden age of modernization, even if it were a farce or an aspiration in need of time to become real. Then why a revolution and severing ties with a powerful ally, the United States of America? Well, partly to fulfill another aspiration, independence. Now, how realistic could that be for a developing country such as Iran? The past 40-plus years since the 1979 Islamic Revolution will tell. Iran has been under UN and US sanctions since the Islamic Republic taking over from a millennia-old monarchy which had ended in a pseudo-constitutional monarchy. And for the past couple of years, Iran's economy has gone into something of a recession following COVID-19, which followed a US maximum pressure campaign. However, this country's economy has shown signs of growth, which means the maximum pressure campaign has failed. For more reasons why it has failed, stay with me, Leila Faramarzi, on Iran Today.
Thank you.
Iran's economy grew 2.4% in 2020-21, according to the World Bank, and it was forecast to grow 3.1% in 2021-22. The economy is hence a lot more resilient than its boycotters predicted, although, to be fair, not all problems stemmed with sanctions. The economy's resilience is basically because it is diversified, and Iran has found allies beyond the US sphere of absolute influence. How sincere they are, time will tell. Our show guest gives us his forecast. Mr. Ghaffari is an international columnist with Jame Jam and Resalat Dailies. He's never short on background or insight with current affairs.
Obviously, we have a yardstick here called our national interest, based on which we decide in what areas and matters we can have overlapping interests with other actors, both strategically and tactically. Certainly, we might have opposing views with Beijing and Moscow on some issues, but provided that the path is laid out based on our national interests, it seems to be a reasonable way to go.
Now, Iran's economy is still standing is not the only reason why America's maximum pressure on us has failed, according to American politicians themselves. Also, the balance of power or influence in West Asia has tipped to the disadvantage of America. Mr. Hanizadeh is an analyst of West Asia affairs. Unable to meet face to face, he still gave us some of his time on Skype.
Of course, Iran has been able to create a better situation economically due to its vast territories and its remarkable clout in the region. There are 14 countries neighboring Iran in the region, a large portion of which have balanced and improved ties with Iran. This has led to an increase in Iran's economic activity with its neighbors to acceptable levels. As an example, the trade volume between Iran and Iraq has topped $10 billion annually. Iran has established economic ties with Afghanistan, Pakistan, Turkey, Azerbaijan Republic, Qatar, and even some of the Persian Gulf states, including Kuwait and the UAE. This is Iran's advantage and what has set Tehran apart from other countries that are under U.S. sanctions.
The maximum pressure campaign against Iran was initiated by former U.S. President Trump when he unilaterally pulled out of the 2015 nuclear deal, or JCPOA, to strike a better deal. That, he hoped, would restrict Iran's ballistic missile program and its influence in West Asia, in its own neighborhood and region, that is. But as time goes by, his hopes seem more and more far-fetched by the day. The Trump campaign has been maintained by the Biden administration, although they realize it has been an abject failure. But perhaps they have seen no other choice.
Some of them, including Mr. Antony Blinken, believe that the U.S. must receive concessions from Iran in return for sanctions relief. This meant that they didn't want to grant concessions to Tehran, but wanted to win some concessions too. But Biden did not subscribe to the optimistic view of Antony Blinken from the beginning. Anyway, the U.S. government and Biden's foreign policy team are yet to reach a consensus on how to return to the JCPOA. But the important point is that the Biden administration has realized that Trump's so-called maximum pressure campaign not only did not work, but only helped strengthen the Islamic Republic of Iran in the international arena.
U.S. State Department spokesman Ned Price said the previous administration left behind a terrible set of options, which in regard to Iran, everything the maximum pressure campaign promised, the opposite ended up coming true. The nuclear deal was intended to limit Iran's peaceful nuclear program, which the West suspects regardless, in return for lifting nuclear-related economic UN sanctions off this country to get its foreign trade up and running. Iran did comply for even a year after Trump binned the deal in May 2018 and imposed the harshest ever U.S. sanctions on this country. But when Iran got nothing of significance from Western parties to the deal, all that happened is it began reversibly inching away from its commitments, and its capability has jumped from enriching uranium to 20% purity to 60% purity, Ned Price lamented. We inherited an Iranian nuclear program that was galloping ahead, that has continued to gallop ahead. Now, no one seems to want to let go of whatever is left of the deal which was signed between Iran and the P5 plus one, and with a US pullout held between Iran and the P4 plus one. That's the UK, France, Russia, China and Germany. To salvage what use remains for the nuclear deal, parties have been in nuclear talks for almost a year. Mr. Yazdan Panah is a geopolitics professor whose interest in the country's benefits goes beyond politics. He shared his scientific outlook at Press TV Studios.
It doesn't seem like a revival of the JCPOA would be the end of all sanctions against Iran. We need to wait and see what happens. But removing a considerable amount of sanctions could potentially be a prelude to and lay the groundwork for a departure from the current state of affairs between Iran and the United States. Take Pakistan, for example, during the U.S. invasion of Afghanistan after the 9/11 attacks. Pakistan had been under U.S. pressure and harsh economic sanctions. The two sides didn't have any ties at all, the same as Iran. But in a sudden change of policy, they decided to end the hostilities. The two sides established very close ties. The future is unpredictable. Maybe such a change could take place in the ties between Iran and the U.S. Although, as I said, considering the pieces of the jigsaw puzzle, such a change is unlikely.
But although U.S. President Biden had vowed to re-enter the agreement, the original nuclear deal that is, and although he dismisses Trump's attempt as a failed maximum pressure, he has both kept all the sanctions imposed under Trump and has unleashed new ones on Iran. Yet Iran stands. How so? Well, this country's economy and partners are diversified with initiatives as to how to find a way around U.S. sanctions and currency. Maximum pressure sanctions had aimed to bring Iran's crude exports down to zero, but well. Iran's oil minister, Javad Oji, boasted, "We have changed contracts and diversified them to attract and encourage investors. In the next 8 years, we will allocate $15 to $20 billion in oil and gas resources to develop the fields, and about the same amount will be invested by Chinese investors in a 25-year agreement with banks and holdings contributing to the field's profits. We will try to have similar contracts with the Russians, like the Chinese." China has kept Iran's oil sales flowing in defiance of U.S. sanctions, even if at a lower price. Now, Russia is a very different case. Iran and Russia both being global energy giants, Russia must see our resources as competition, especially now that with the Ukraine conflict, it has been boycotted by its fellow Europeans, to whom it was the energy provider.
One of the issues in which we are considered rivals is the oil and energy sector. This is something over which mistakes are made. I mean that long-term strategic commonalities are taken as absolute agreements in all respects. This is surely a mistake. We have shared goals on some issues and we have differing views on others. These distinctions must be observed in our calculations, behavior, and even our officials' rhetoric.
Yet, Oji insists that with Russia, we have a comprehensive roadmap in the field of oil and gas industry in all upstream and downstream sectors. Now, another neutralizer of America's evil attempts against Iran is this country's acceptance of technology as a hub of science in ancient and olden pre- and post-Islamic eras. Also, the neutralizer simply of U.S. hegemony and or its influence in West Asia is majorly Iran's asymmetric tactics of forging regional alliances. For a short break. We'll be back in no time.
This is Iran Today. Iran Today is broadcast every week on Fridays and Saturdays. The series analyzes major political, economic,
cultural and social events concerning Iran. So don't miss the opportunity to listen to Iran Today on IRIB English Radio.
Plenty more needed to fill in the gaps. But first, it's back indoors for a quick media review to give other outlets a chance to have their say. Here's how it's been put down in writing. The print runs the headline, "The sanctions work. Lessons from Russia, Iran and the US war on terror." Economic sanctions can only be one tool in the Western toolbox for enforcing their designed global peace. While they have imposed great economic pain in the past, they have been more unsuccessful than successful in achieving their political goal. The key determinant of sanctions' success is how the sanctions target versus the cost of changing its behavior compared to the economic cost imposed. That is disconnection from international financial markets. Targeted sanctions became much more central to the U.S.'s sanctions policy after the crippling sanctions on Iraq during the 1990s, which primarily had the effect that the Iraqi people suffered but did not succeed in fundamentally changing the calculations of the Iraqi regime. Donald Trump's unilateral policies of maximum pressure failed in changing Iran's or Venezuela's policies, even though they brought back comprehensive sanctions. We've got a word from Mehr News. Cleric warns U.S. to wait for more humiliating defeat from Iran. Referring to a U.S. failure of an exertion of a maximum pressure campaign against Iran, Tehran Provincial Friday Prayers leader said, "We tell them officials to wait for another disgraceful defeat from Iran in the current year." Addressing worshippers at Tehran's Imam Khomeini Musalla, Ayatollah Sayyid Ahmad Khatami reiterated that U.S. officials themselves have acknowledged that the maximum pressure campaign policy against Iran has completely failed. Turning to the slogan of the current year named by the leader of the Islamic Revolution as the year of production, knowledge-based job creating, Tehran Interim Friday Prayers leader recommended government officials to make their utmost efforts in line with realizing the objectives of this slogan in the current year of 1401, which started on March 20th, 2022. That'll be it. Thanks for staying with us, but there's more of the show coming up. Iran, as an embracer of new generational technology, became the second country in West Asia to connect to the internet. That was in 1993. Other examples are, this country successfully launched its first satellite into orbit in 2009. Also, Iran has done big on nanotechnology. It even put its first drone into operation in 1985.
During the Saadabad talks with the European sides, Mr. Jack Straw, Joschka Fischer and Dominique de Villepin, the British, German and French foreign ministers, Iran once made a request to acquire some centrifuges for research and scientific purposes so the students and those who want to work in the field of nuclear energy could use them as educational tools. But they did not allow that even at such a level. But today, thanks to the efforts put in by scientists, some of whom were martyred, we have been able to manufacture thousands of centrifuges and use them for educational purposes and R&D.
It was on the scale of a country with a medium-sized economy that the Islamic Revolution took place. But it has proven over time that it can impact relations and plans drawn up for the region.
The Islamic Republic of Iran has been confronting the U.S. and some of its allies, including Israel, over the past four decades. It has adopted different ways to confront the U.S. anti-Iran efforts, including relying on the inside, boosting the resistance economy, and creating alliances with its neighbors, including Iraq, Qatar, Azerbaijan, and Afghanistan. These countries have established balanced ties with Iran in the past four decades, especially after the overthrow of Saddam's regime in 2003. Iraq is considered to be aligned with Iran. Also, Qatar and some of the Arab states south of the Persian Gulf have created balanced political ties with Iran.
Iran's regional rivals have spent billions of dollars on Western weaponry, A lot of it's coming from the UK. But as the BBC observed in 2019, sanctions-bound Iran has succeeded in embedding itself across the region into a position of strategic advantage for just a fraction of that cost. How is that it built up a network of non-state alliances right across West Asia, basically to keep danger far from its borders, in aiding countries against Western interference or in response to a cry for help from fellow Shia populations across the region. Although, as a natural consequence of its presence as a regional state most capable of securing the region, Iran may continue to seize opportunities to expand its third-party capability. Talking of third parties, Hezbollah, for one, has acted as central interlocutor for an array of Arab political parties with ties to Iran.
According to the U.S. calculations, it's expected to dominate the entire Syria and Iraq through Daesh. But we saw that did not happen. The reason was that the network of resistance, which comprises Hamas, Hezbollah, Ansarullah, Hashd al-Shaabi, and other groups, was shaped so the groups were able to work towards the same goal. Today, after 43 years, we no longer witness scattered resistance groups in the region, but we're seeing an archipelago of groups who are being considered unified in their principles and goals.
How IISS, the London-based International Institute for Strategic Studies, puts it is, the Islamic Republic of Iran has tipped the balance of effective force in the Middle East in its favor by countering superior conventional forces with influence operations and use of third-party forces. The policy of ignoring Iran did not work. Iran resisted. Iran has also successfully controlled damages of U.S. economic terrorism. So yes, it is a powerful nation and has a lot of relations with other nations with a lot of initiatives for regional cooperation. The U.S. may have been in suspense, but with an assuredness it would now reprogram ties and come to a new understanding and deals with leaders of the revolution. But things didn't go to plan, and the U.S. reacted angrily, fighting tooth and nail from the beginning to maintain its position. Sanctions aside, it played a material part in the Iraq attack on Iran in the 1980s.
The United States has hatched numerous plots and schemes against the Islamic Republic of Iran since the victory of the Islamic Revolution, mobilizing terrorist groups inside Iran, provoking different ethnic groups, attempts for staging a coup in Iran, and then the war between Iraq under the former Ba'ath regime of Saddam and Iran to undermine the foundations of the Islamic Revolution. Over the past four decades, the U.S. has also resorted to other tools, namely imposing sanctions, creating an unbearable environment in the region, and fomenting disputes between Iran and its neighbors south of the Persian Gulf and south of the Caucasus. These were among some of the steps Washington took, which are still ongoing.
Shortly after the revolution, on November 4, 1979, a group recognized as revolutionary students occupied the American embassy. Angered that the recently deposed Shah or King Mohammad Reza Pahlavi had been allowed into the United States.
After that, other incidents affected the bilateral ties, including the overtaking of the U.S. Embassy by Iranian students. That incident gave way to more hostilities between the U.S. and Iran. These all led to the United States targeting of an Iranian aircraft over the Persian Gulf and many other bitter incidents that have been happening up to this point, where the Americans have blocked billions of dollars of funds belonging to Iranians. Obviously, under such circumstances, they shouldn't expect that the Iranian people are happy with them or that the Iranian government would forgive that. Considering the incidents that happened during the early years after the victory of the Islamic Revolution, the tensions were bound to escalate and get even worse at some points in time.
The U.S. froze about $12 billion in Iranian assets, most of which were released in 1981 as part of a release deal. Freezing assets, even seizing assets, paled compared to what came in 1980. That was an Iraq-Iran war that went on for 8 years, with America and a world of allies throwing their weight behind Iraq's Saddam Hussein, supplying him with even chemical weapons, which he used on civilians in Iran. It's doubtful Saddam would even have dared attack Iran, whatever the cause, without a green light from world powers.
The United States and the USSR both realized that they were dealing with a new phenomenon distinct from every other revolution. Therefore, they decided to destroy the revolution by any means necessary. The West and the East's full and extensive support for the Saddam regime during the war with Iran has roots in such a realization. After the downfall of the Pahlavi regime in Iran, they thought that Saddam could be the best catalyst to destroy the Islamic revolution, especially considering his thirst to replace the former Shah of Iran as the region's gendarme. Therefore, they showed Saddam the green light and the 80-year-long war broke out.
Even after the JCPOA signing and before Trump's USA pulled out, Iranian citizens were all labeled as potential terrorists and were banned from entering the United States. This was due to the implementation of Donald Trump's executive order titled Protecting the Nation from Foreign Terrorist Entry into the United States. Yes, it's the same America we are talking of, the one that admittedly created or supported terror groups in this region, Daesh included.
The Iranian Revolution is different from those that took place in the 18th, 19th, and 20th centuries. It's safe to say that it was the last revolution that changed the political system entirely and replaced it with a brand new one. The replaced system was driven by its own ideology. This revolution's basic principles were characterized by the revolution, religion, and ideology. On that basis, the ideologies didn't align with the geopolitics of the colonialists, headed by the U.S. Therefore, such tensions were only natural to arise.
Iran is not alone in taking credit for America's loss of ground and the greenest grass. Part of the credit goes to America. America's departure from its core values and its move toward a global dictatorship would mean that this country would now be viewed as a supporter of a racist Israel and an occupier of Afghanistan, Iraq, and dozens of other countries at the end of the 20th century and early 21st century. Cato did a piece in 2004, that's almost 20 years before the U.S. finally pulled out of Afghanistan, under the title, When Liberators Become Occupiers. Among innumerable examples of American wars it lists beginning in 1912, it recalls the Philippines in 1898. When a handful of Americans died to liberate the Philippines from the Spanish, but over 4,000 Americans died in the struggle to stamp out Filipino independence, the Filipino death toll was placed at more than 200,000, going by some estimates. As for Iraq, when first occupied by America, it reads, in 2003, a foreign army did not occupy Iraq. Saddam Hussein was a tyrant, but he was an Iraqi. The goal of U.S. policy should be to hand over real, full, and genuine sovereignty to the Iraqi people. The bottom line is, maximum resistance has triumphed over maximum pressure, as Iran's President Raisi put it. There still is room for agreement if the parties are ready to lift cruel sanctions against the Iranian people, he said, stressing the importance of neutralizing sanctions if they will not be removed for the Vienna talks to bear fruit.
Anyway, the U.S. still recognizes itself as the leader of the New World Order. It has the indices and necessary tools to do so. Although the U.S. power of widespread interference and aggression the way we've seen over the past decades has subsided, which could be a tactic where the U.S. really is incapable of doing it anymore. This doesn't mean that Washington has lost all its power or has been disappeared from the face of the earth. If anything, if it's on the wane, we gain nothing from it. Because we need to stand on our own feet.
That'll be it for today. Thanks from the whole team. Do return to the box at the same times next week and each week after. Bye for now.
Cultural news. Social news. Scientific news. Artistic news. With delight.
A super rare birth has added a cute member to critically endangered Sumatran rhinos of Indonesia. The newborn calf is the sixth born since intensive efforts to breed the species began in the 1980s. The female calf, which doesn't have a name yet, was given birth to by a rhino named Rosa in a sanctuary. Rosa has suffered 8 miscarriages since 2005 when she was brought in from the wild for a breeding program. Fewer than 80 Sumatran rhinos remain in the world, mainly on the Indonesian islands of Sumatra and Borneo. Excessive poaching along with other threats has brought the species to the brink of extinction. The cherry blossom or sakura season in the Japanese capital is a magical experience as trees burst into bloom, dousing the streets with stunning shades of pink. This year, people are enjoying the occasion to the fullest as COVID restrictions are no more there. Thousands gathered in central Tokyo wearing masks, taking pictures and posing for selfies among the trees. Cherry flowers reach full bloom on Sunday, 4 days earlier than usual, according to the Japan Meteorological Agency. The age-old tradition of viewing cherry blossoms typically takes place across the country. The flowers are a national obsession. People flock to parks to hold parties and picnics. However, due to the pandemic, authorities have asked people to refrain from eating and drinking outdoors.
Millions of people across the world celebrate Earth Hour, a symbolic Lights Out event that aims to call attention to environmental issues and the necessity of protecting the planet. The annual event encourages people to turn off their non-essential lighting for an hour and take a break from using electronic devices during that period. Earth Hour takes place every year on the last Saturday of March. The theme of this year's event is Shape Our Future and has been celebrated in more than 180 countries, including Greece, France, Thailand, and Iran. The initiative was first introduced in 2007 by the World Wildlife Fund as a grassroots movement for highlighting the collective responsibility of the people towards their environment. An ancient place in Guatemala with special significance for the Mayan culture could be the next entry on the World Heritage List. The historic village known today as the Takalik Abach Archaeological Park was occupied for 1,700 years before it was abandoned and discovered in 1888. It's said to have been home to a pre-Hispanic people. Archaeologists found their way to this mysterious piece of land where they found a series of exotic artifacts and sculptures back in 2008. Guatemala's Minister of Cultural Heritage says this site has a sacred place in the nation's culture.
Takalik Abach is a sacred place with important links to Guatemala's culture. It's a place that harbors flora and fauna biodiversity and even Mayan spirituality and war is wild. This makes this place highly important within the Mayan culture in Guatemala.
Archaeologists believe the monuments go back to the deep-rooted civilizations of Olmec and Maya in a Central American culture around 400 BC. The government has presented the site to UNESCO, hoping it will be declared a World Heritage Site. A Belgian-British teenager is on a solo flight around the globe that could make him a world record holder. Mark Rutherford started his journey from a small airfield near the Bulgarian capital Sofia on Wednesday. His first destination is the island of Sicily in Italy. From there, he'll fly south to Africa and then around the globe to cross the finish line again in Bulgaria. The 16-year-old pilot says he got his inspiration from his sister.
Egypt's rich history seems to be a gift
that keeps on giving. The country has unveiled some exquisite newly discovered tombs. The pharaonic tombs were found at the Saqqara archaeological site south of Cairo. The site is a big necropolis of Memphis, an ancient capital of Egypt. The graves belonged to a senior royal official, or other senior royal officials. Some of the graves are engraved with interesting titles such as Steward of the Royal House and Supervisor of the Garden. The tombs are around 4,000 years old, dating back to the Old Kingdom of Egypt.
Nowruz, or the Persian New Year, is celebrated worldwide by millions of people, including the people in Indian-controlled Kashmir. The region, known for its natural beauty worldwide, turns magical each year during its spring season. To mark nature's revival, the people of Kashmir have dedicated a day to thank the mesmerizing beauty of spring. Our correspondent Shahana Bhatt reports.
As the spring season begins in Kashmir, the earth turns lush green and the trees bear colorful blossoms, with the sky visibly blue and waters clear and glossy. After a not-so-harsh winter this year, the people of Kashmir are welcoming the onset of spring. Nowruz, or the Persian New Year, marks the beginning of spring and is celebrated on March 21st. New trees are planted while people offer prayers and seek God's help for a prosperous year.
Each year, we await this season so that we can plant new trees. The process of their growth gives us hope, and that hope teaches us that God has set a time for everything. We can't fast-track it. We can only do our best efforts.
On the occasion of Nowruz, women in Kashmir prepare unique dishes made from lotus stem and fish. Mehra and her sister have a busy day today. Friends and family are invited to relish the moment.
We have been taught by our mothers and grandmothers to cook these delicacies on the special occasion of Nowruz. It requires lots of dedication, and what matters is that this food brings friends and families together, and a lot of positive energy is exchanged. For us, Nowruz is not just an occasion, but it marks a fresh beginning of love, growth, and prosperity.
On the occasion of Nowruz, the Kashmiri administration often organizes musical festivals to add fervor to the celebrations. People, especially children, visit these musical festivals in large numbers so that the year starts with cheerful memories. This year, scores of tourists have also come to witness Kashmir's spring.
We had heard that Kashmir looks magical, but we witnessed in reality that this land looks fabulous, especially the spring season.
The early arrival of tourists has added a lot of positivity to Kashmir's tourism sector, which has been hit hard by years of political instability and turmoil. Persian culture is deeply rooted in Kashmir, and celebrating Nowruz is a sign of its influence.
Nowruz marks a new beginning, and after suffering decades of political instability and 2 years of the COVID pandemic, people are only hoping for a return back to a normal life and an everlasting peace. Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
Turkey inaugurates the world's longest suspension bridge over the Dardanelles Strait. The bridge is more than 2 kilometers long and connects Turkey's European and Asian shores. It cuts travel time between the two locations to just 6 minutes. A consortium of Turkish and South Korean firms began constructing the huge bridge in 2017 with a budget of 2.5 billion euros. 5,000 workers participated in the colossal undertaking. Passenger vehicles must pay a fare of 200 Turkish liras, or around $14, to use the bridge. In In Peru, paleontologists have unearthed the skull of a ferocious marine predator that is an ancestor of the modern-day whale. The 36-million-year-old skull was dug up intact after it was discovered in Peru's southern desert. The fossil belongs to an ancient mammal whose contemporary descendants include dolphins. Recreations of how the animal looked like show it mostly resembles a giant lizard that moved like a snake. Paleontologists say it was a top predator measuring some 12 meters long.
The discovery is very important because the skull is in a perfect state of preservation. The skull and the jaw are in the right anatomical position. The teeth are complete. It's very possible this might be a new Basilosaurus species. If this is so, there is no other fossil like this one anywhere else in the world.
Salas further explained when the ancient animal died, its skull might have sunk to the bottom of the seafloor, where it was quickly preserved. The skull, measuring 1.3 meters long, was unveiled at Lima's Museum of Natural History. The Peruvian desert is rich in fossils and offers scientists 42 million years' worth of evolutionary evidence. Other fossils found there include the four-legged dwarf whale and sharks, among others. A painter in Pakistan shifts from trucks to trainers to uncover a hip new canvas for his famous truck art. Haydar Ali says he works on each pair of shoes for up to 4 days, and his paint of choice is mainly acrylic. He also uses other forms of durable material such as oil paints to get the job done. The seasoned artist charges select clients $400 for each set. His designs feature intricate bespoke patterns including flowers, peacocks, and wildly colorful motifs. He says new requests typically arrive every 4 days. Orders for painted trainers started pouring in for the truck artist after a surge of social media interest.
Ideas keep popping up for me, and sometimes clients have ideas. A client came to me from the US asking for a painting on some shoes. I told him an exorbitant fee to discourage him, but he agreed, so I decided, let's do it then.
He has dispatched 8 pairs to various places in Pakistan and abroad since he first started painting trainers in January. Ali comes from a family of truck artists who made a living off of painting lorries. He came to international fame when his work was exhibited at a museum in the U.S. 2 decades ago. So far, the veteran truck artist has applied his craft to an airplane as well as a passenger car, among others. The art form is mainly seen on Pakistani trucks, and today, the trade is one of the country's most famous cultural exports.
Archaeologists have discovered a 500-year-old Aztec altar with 164 in Mexico City, Mexico's largest starfish offering discovered to date. Archaeologists believe it was built around the year 1500. Jaguar bones and other remains such as seashells were also found. Scientists believe the fossils found correspond to a species known as chocolate chip sea star or Nidorella armata.
This is really interesting because if you think about it, chocolate chip sea star looks like the skin of a jaguar. It's orange with dark spots. Probably that is why this species was selected, but we still need to analyze all the starfish because we found 160 of them and we think they all belong to the same species. But we need to research further every one of them.
According to experts, the location of the altar within the Templo Mayor complex and the jaguar motifs suggest the offering was related to the war. Mexico is brimmed with archaeological sites of several civilizations, including Aztecs.
IRIB English Radio.